people, you are here with She's a Genius podcast. Today, we are so elated to have with us Rihanna Anderson. And actually, I want to make sure we're clear. It's Dr. Rihanna Anderson.
That's right.
Thank you for joining us. How are you today?
Thanks so much for having me. I'm doing really well. How are you?
I am phenomenal.
Great.
I am glad to be here. I'm excited about all the wonderful things we're going to talk about today and just your journey. So, I mean, let's just cut right to it.
Let's do it.
I was reading your bio, and one thing I love how you mentioned, you said you were born and raised for and returned to Detroit.
Yes.
I love how that was worded. You know, I just had to put that in there really quickly. So you're from Detroit. Just yes. Tell us a little about Rihanna, your story. Who are you?
Yeah. So I think the thing that I tell folks all the time, to know me is to know I'm from 6 Mile and Schaefer. So I think in Detroit, people are very clear about sides. So I'm a West Side baby. And then you got to talk about your approximation to a Coney of some sort. So I was the L. George's Coney Island baby on 6 Mile and Schaefer, and that was just right down the street from my house. So that for me was this centering, this grounding of being in a space where I actually didn't know what the West Side meant in growing up in it, right? So like you heard stereotypes about the differences between East and West Side. Mm-hmm. You saw that there were some income, perhaps, differences or like house differences, but you didn't really know the history of that.
Mm-hmm.
Really until I've come back recently. I didn't really understand just how dynamic that shift was, how dynamic and intentional this resource differentiation was between the East and the West Side,
okay.
But I was a product of it. I was a West Side baby and went to some of the traditional West Side schools. So went to Bates, went to Renaissance.
All right.
Was a part of this pipeline of educators who...
Hold on.
You cannot. You know what? Also, let me just tell the people, you have me on a green mic. So I think this is all intentional because you are a green person through and through.
Well,
but you are on a yellow mic.
Yeah.
You're on a yellow mic. So we'll get to that in one bit.
Don't let her fool you.
we'll get to why the yellow is important in just 1 minute. But no, my whole family went to Cass. So I was actually like the shame of the family. They were like, you went to Renaissance? Like,
right.
That was not a good thing, let me just say. But
let's say the alumni game for Cass Tech is strong worldwide, okay? You be in Ghana, somebody here in Detroit, they're like, oh, Cass Tech?
Mm-hmm.
Around the world. I'm in D.C. They're like, oh, yeah, I heard of Cass Tech.
Yeah.
So,
they don't
okay.
say what they've heard, though. Let me just be clear.
Ooh.
On that.
You know, we won't get into that because we just know that it's only two people, the people that went to Cass and the ones that wish they did.
It's true. I did wish that I went to Cass, and my mom said, are you going to get on that 4 a.m. Dexter bus? I said, no, ma'am, I'm not. I'm going to go to the school 5 minutes down the street. And that's exactly what happened.
And real talk, you know, real love for Renaissance. So seriously, I have relatives that went to Renaissance High School as well.
Yeah.
And I actually did have interest in going to Renaissance when I was in middle school. But we will, you know, just keep it there and just say we have love for Renaissance, too. Now, Rihanna, keep telling us. So you went to high school at Renaissance, and then what happened after that?
Okay, so then I was in school for the next millennium or so. So went to the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor after that.
Okay.
Go blue all day.
Okay.
And I was there during, I think, a really interesting time. So I came into the university as a freshman, learning about affirmative action, and actually, while entering, not being pro-affirmative action because of the experience that I had at my schools going to Bates and Renaissance. I thought every Black child had the same type of opportunities and also grew up in a community that was caring and loving. Now, to be clear, like I did have some things environmentally that were amiss, right? So I always talk about this idea of memorials.
Okay.
And seeing so many memorials in our neighborhood around these posts, why would someone have flowers and bears and things for someone? Oh, it's because they've been killed. And we saw it so frequently that you would just know that death was around you. There was this idea that death was ever looming. And there was only one reason that I didn't succumb to that, which was the family. Like, my family was just very protective and was like, you're not getting involved in any of that stuff, right? So it's not to say that, you know, the West Side was without its problems. And certainly 6 Mile and Schaefer presented some problems for my family to the extent that they decided to move out of the area and eventually outside of Detroit. But fast forwarding to the idea of affirmative action, I thought that everybody had these opportunities, that everybody was exposed. And then my first week in a chemistry class, I learned quickly what that meant. The division of myself from other classmates, the preparation that folks had to go into week two that I didn't have. And I was like, but I went to one of the best schools for Black people. Like, how is this possible that I'm not prepared? I'm a child of two educators. How is it possible that I'm not ready for week two of chemistry in my freshman year at the University of Michigan?
So it was a shock.
It was a shock. It was a wake-up call. And it was a time, again, as a freshman, when I was making a decision. I'll never forget my first semester. I was declining all of these opportunities to go into these Black organizations. So a lot of people knew me from Detroit. They knew that I was involved in like Detroit City Council and a lot of things at Renaissance, student government, et cetera. And so they're saying, like, clearly you're going to continue that activism here at Michigan. And I was like, no, I'm going to focus on my work. I'm going to, again, be somebody who's trying to just get prepared for that second week of chemistry. I want to be pre-med. I want to be a doctor. That second week was the wake-up call that I needed to say, wow, like, inequity, like, is ever present. It is something that even for the most prepared, educated Black child that comes into the University of Michigan, they can't do this. Like, this is not something that they...
Without that support. Without the resources that are provided on a campus.
Right.
So would you say your experience of going through that is kind of what directed you into what you currently do? And I know we're skipping over a little bit, but I just had to ask this question.
Yeah.
You know, being a professor now at that same institution.
Yeah.
Is that part of what directed you in that direction?
Yeah, I always credit the family and education as a dual factor kind of tornado of like what made me.
Tornado. Okay.
It has to be tornadic, right? There, you know, it's not... Nothing is done happenstantially. Nothing is done fluidly. Like it takes sometimes some inclement weather, some storms to get you to where you need to be.
That's real. That's real. You know, and that's an incredible way to look at it. Now let's go back now.
Okay.
So after you went through that experience, you know, that second week, because some people are deterred at that point and drop out of college. They're like, okay, this is not for me. It's too hard. I can't do it. It's a lot of intimidation. It's a lot of pressure. What did you do to keep you moving forward?
Yeah. So again, it was this idea that these organizations started to knock on my door and say, like, where are you at in the struggle? And so I eventually said, I'll go to a meeting or two.
Okay.
And
say yes to the call.
Yes to the call. It was on me. There was no way I could have denied it or declined it. And I tried to push it back just to say that I came here for a degree and that's what I want. Not understanding how important activism and movement orientation is to your whole self, to your development, which is what, going back to your original question about, like, is that why I'm doing some of the work today? We need children who are whole beings. We can't have them do just one thing or the other. Black children have to see themselves as Black children, which allows them to be their full selves all the time. And so I did absolutely take that same perspective and grow into the person who said affirmative action is being challenged. My first semester at the University of Michigan, I have seen the light within 1 week of how important it is to continue this fight. And so I had a really unique privilege to come in with affirmative action being in the Supreme Court case and being able to go to DC in March and leaving out of the university my senior year when it came back to the state as a ballot initiative. So I saw all 3 years of it. I was on the front lines of it by the end. And it was such a important shaping experience from 2002 to 2006. No other years went through what we did because we saw it from beginning to end, and it shaped my activism in a way that I can only just give, you know, gratitude for and learn so much from.
You were interfaced with it directly.
Yeah.
You were dealing with it on a day-to-day, you know.
Day-to-day, media panels, like, you know, there are still, my phone number is still attached to some press calls that I saw, you know, from University of Michigan. I've tried to scrub it, and you can't scrub it from the internet. But my name, my reputation is still tied to the activism work.
Okay.
And that for me is an important piece where people, I think HBCUs are an incredible resource and incredibly important for people's development. And my 2002 to 2006 development at Michigan was part of like an incredible response to what systems are trying to do to Black youth and Black students.
Right.
And without me going through that,
right.
I don't think I would be who I am today, for sure.
Wow. You know, in affirmative action, a lot of people, you know, skirt past it, don't talk about it and talk about the benefits. And you have so many people that are saying, you know, it's not a good thing to have and it's not a good, you know, reason to have it inside of school. So in your own words, especially for listeners who are tuning in and maybe a younger audience who don't really know what affirmative action is, point blank. They hear, can you break it down and tell them, since you were so direct in your face with it?
Really, we're thinking about two things. So one, what is the historical account or the historical thing that has happened to people like you? And I keep it broad to people like you because affirmative action was created for white women, right? So it was created for women, and the majority of whom were white, getting benefits that related really clearly and directly to feminist cause. So white women benefited in a lot of industries. So the employment, like the labor force was a huge space in which affirmative action really benefited white women first. So anyway, it's talking about groups generally get in the historical context of what has happened to oppress and go against the advancement of certain groups. And then the second piece of that is the response. So how can we actually do something about what has historically happened to these groups? And in direct response to these feminist and civil rights movements of the 50s, 60s, 70s, you're seeing this response, this counter. Well, we're trying to affirmatively create action that's going to go against what we've done in the past. Now, somewhere in the United States of America, someone said that these things are done and over, and we should stop creating systems to try to redress what happened in the past. So the thing that I always say, that I have to just say right now, is if you can show me where in the United States we are, where we have been actually racial. So if we're post-racial now, mm-hmm. that means that at some point we were racial. So somebody point that out to me. Right, when were we racial? Mm-hmm. After the civil rights movement, you show me a time in which the things that people were fighting for actually happened. And then I'll say, yeah, we're ready to go ahead and drop all of these things like affirmative action and the things of the like. So point to me during the decade or the movement by which there were no gaps in education, there were no gaps in wealth, everyone owned homes equitably. You